insulting you, Raph.
Kat, if you think he's safe, even after he's bloodied your face and...
He glanced at her tattered dress.
Rolled you around in a puddle of mud, then I believe you.
Katza smiled.
May we see him?
You may. And I have good news. He's awake.
Randa's castle was full of secret inner passageways. It had been that way since its construction so many generations before. They were so plentiful that even Randa didn't know of all of them. No one did, really, although Raffin had had the mind as a child to notice when two rooms came together in a way that seemed not to match. Katza and Raffin had done a fair bit of exploring as children, Katza keeping guard so that anyone who came upon one of Raffin's investigations would scuttle away at the sight of her small, glaring form. Raffin and Katza had chosen their living quarters because a passageway connected them, and because another passageway connected Raffin to the science libraries. Some of the passageways were secret, and some were known by the entire court. The one in Raffin's workrooms was secret. It led from the inside of a storage room in a back alcove, up a stairway, and to a small room set between two floors of the castle. It was a windowless room, dark and musty, but it was the only place in the castle that they could be sure no one would find, and that Raffin and Ban could stay so near to most of the time. Ban was Raffin's friend of many years, a young man who had worked in the libraries as a boy. One day Raffin had stumbled across him, and the two children had fallen to talking about herbs and medicines and about what happened when you mixed the ground root of one plant with the powdered flower of another. Katza had been amazed that there could be more than one person in the Midlands who found such things interesting enough to talk about, and relieved that Raffin had found someone other than her to bore. Shortly thereafter, Raffin had begged Ban's help with a particular experiment, and from that time on had effectively stolen Ban for himself. Ban was Raffin's assistant in all things. Raffin ushered Katza and Poe through the door in the back of the storage room, a torch in his hand. They slipped up the steps that led to the secret chamber.
Has he said anything?
Nothing. Other than that they blindfolded him when they took him. He's still very weak. He doesn't seem to remember much.
Do you know who took him?
Poe said.
Was Mergen responsible?
We don't think so, but all we know for sure is that it wasn't Randa.
The stairs ended at a doorway. Raffin fiddled with a key.
Randa doesn't know he's here,
Poe said. It was more of a statement than a question.
Randa doesn't know. He must never know.
Raffin opened the door then, and they crowded into the tiny room. Ban sat in a chair beside a narrow bed, reading in the dim light of a lamp on the table beside him. Prince Tilif lay on his back in the bed, his eyes closed and his hands clasped over his chest. Upon their entrance, Ban stood. He seemed unsurprised as Poe rushed forward. He only stepped aside and offered his chair. Poe sat and leaned toward his grandfather, looked into his sleeping face, simply looked at him, and did not touch him. Then Poe took the man's hands and bent his forehead to them, exhaling slowly. Katza felt as if she were intruding on something private. She dropped her eyes until Poe sat up again.
Your face is turning purple, Prince Greening. You're on your way to a very black eye.
Poe. Call me Poe.
Poe, I'll get you some ice from the vault. Come, Ban. Let's get some supplies for our two warriors.
Raffin and Ban slipped through the doorway, and when Katza and Poe turned back to Tilif, the old man's eyes were open.
Grandfather!
Poe?
His voice rasped with the effort of speaking.
Poe!
He struggled to clear his throat, and then lay still for a moment, exhausted.
Great seas, boy. I suppose I shouldn't be surprised to see you.
I've been tracking you down, Grandfather.
Move that lamp closer, boy. What in the name of Leonid have you done to your face?
It's nothing, Grandfather. I've only been fighting.
With what? A pack of wolves?
With the Lady Katza.
He cocked his head at Katza, who stood at the foot of the bed.
Don't worry, Grandfather. It was only a friendly scuffle.
A friendly scuffle? You look worse than she does, Poe.
Poe burst into laughter. He laughed a lot, this leaned prince.
I've met my match, Grandfather.
More than your match, it looks to me. Come here, child,
he said to Katza.
Come to the light.
Katza approached the other side of the bed and knelt beside him. Tilif turned to her, and she became suddenly conscious of her dirty, bloody face, her tangled hair. How dreadful she must look to this old man.
My dear, I believe you saved my life.
Lord Prince, if anyone did that, it was my cousin Raffin with his medicines.
Yes, Raffin's a good boy.
He patted her hand.
But I know what you did, you and the others. You've saved my life, though I can't think why. I doubt any Leonid has ever done you a kindness.
I'd never met a Leonid before you, Lord Prince. But you seem very kind.
Tilif closed his eyes. He seemed to sink into his pillows. His breath was a drawn-out sigh.
He falls asleep like that,
Raffin said from the doorway.
His strength will come back, with rest.
He carried something wrapped in a cloth, which he handed to Poe.
Ice. Hold it to that eye. Looks like she cracked your lip, too. Where else does it hurt?
Everywhere. I feel as if I've been run over by a team of horses.
Honestly, Katza, were you trying to kill him?
If I'd been trying to kill him, he'd be dead,
Katza said, and Poe laughed again.
He wouldn't be laughing if it were that bad.
It wasn't that bad, or at least Raffin was able to determine that none of his bones were broken and that he'd sustained no bruises that wouldn't heal. Then Raffin turned to Katza. He examined the scratch that stretched across her jaw and wiped dirt and blood from her face.
It's not very deep, this scratch. Any other pains?
None. I don't even feel the scratch.
I suppose you'll have to retire this dress. Helda will give you a terrible scolding.
Yes, I'm devastated about the dress.
Raffin smiled. He took hold of her arms and held her out from him so that he could look her up and down. He laughed.
What can be so funny to a prince who's turned his hair blue?
You look like you've been in a fight for the first time in your life.
Katza had 5 rooms. Her sleeping room, decorated with dark draperies and wall hangings that Helda had chosen because Katza had refused to form an opinion on the matter. Her bathing room, white marble, large and cold, functional. Her dining room, with windows looking onto the courtyard and a small table where she ate, sometimes with Raffin or Helda, or with Gidden when he wasn't driving her to distraction. Her sitting room, full of soft chairs and pillows that Helda again had chosen. She didn't use the sitting room. The 5th room used to be her workroom, but she couldn't remember the last time she'd embroidered or crocheted or darned a stocking. She couldn't remember the last time she'd worn a stocking, truth be told. She'd turned the room into a place for the storage of her weapons. Swords, daggers, knives, bows, and staffs lined the walls. She'd fitted the room with a solid square table, and now the council meetings were held there. Katza bathed for the 2nd time that day and knotted her wet hair behind her head. She fed her dress to the sleeping room fire and watched its smoky demise with great satisfaction. A boy arrived who was to keep watch during the council meeting. Katza went into the weapons room and lit the torches that hung on the walls between her knives and bows. Raffin and Poe were the first to arrive. Poe's hair was damp from his own bath. The skin had blackened around his eye, the gold eye, and made his gaze even more rakish and uneven than it had been before. He slouched against the table with his hands in his pockets. His eyes flashed around the room, taking in Katz's collection of weapons. Poe was wearing a new shirt, open at the neck, and with the sleeves rolled to the elbows. His forearms were as sun-darkened as his face. She didn't know why she should notice. She found herself frowning.
Sit, your high majestic lord princes.
She yanked a chair from the table and sat down herself.
You're in a fine temper,
Your hair is blue,
Katza snapped back. Al strode into the room. At the sight of the scratch on Katza's face, his mouth dropped open. He turned to Poe and saw the black eye. He turned back to Katza. He began to chuckle. He slapped his hand on the table, and the chuckle turned into a roar.
How I would love to have seen that fight, my lady. Oh, how I would love to have seen it.
Poe was smiling.
The lady won, which I doubt will surprise you.
Katza glowered.
It was a draw. No one won.
I say.
It was Giddens' voice, and as he entered the room and looked from Katza to Poe, his eyes grew dark. He put his hand to his sword. He whirled on Poe.
I don't see where you come off fighting the Lady Katza.
Giddens, don't be ridiculous.
Giddens turned to her.
He had no right to attack you.
I struck the first blow, Giddens. Sit down.
If you struck the first blow, then he must have insulted you.
Katza jumped up from her seat.
That's enough, Giddens. If you think I need you to defend me.
A guest to this court, a total stranger.
Giddens!
Lord Giddens.
Poe had risen to his feet, and his voice cut through hers.
If I've insulted your lady, you must forgive me. I rarely have the pleasure of practicing with someone of her caliber, and I couldn't resist the temptation. I can assure you she did more damage to me than I did to her.
Giddens didn't take his hand from his sword, but his grimace lessened.
I'm sorry to have insulted you as well. I see now I should have taken greater care of her face. Forgive me. It was unpardonable.
He reached his hand across the table. Giddens' angry eyes grew warm again. He reached out and shook Poe's hand.
You understand my concern.
Of course.
Katza looked from one of them to the other, the two of them shaking hands, understanding each other's concern. She didn't see where Giddens came off feeling insulted. She didn't see how Giddens had any place in it at all. Who were they to take her fight away from her and turn it into some sort of understanding between themselves? He should have taken more care of her face. She would knock his nose from his face. She would thump them both, and she would apologize to neither. Poe caught her eyes then, and she did nothing to soften the silent fury she sent across the table to him.
Shall we sit?
Someone said. Poe held her eyes as they sat. There was no trace of humor in his expression, no trace of the arrogance of his exchange with Giddens. And then he mouthed two words. It was as clear as if he'd said them aloud.
Forgive me.
Well, Giddens was still a horse's ass. 16 council members attended the meeting, in addition to Poe and Lord Davitt. Katza, Raffin, Giddens, Al, and Al's wife, Bertel, two soldiers under Al's command, two spies who worked with him, three underlords of Giddens' rank, and four servants, one a woman who worked in the kitchens of the castle, one a stable hand, one a washerwoman, and one a clerk in Randa's counting house. There were others in the castle involved with the council, but most nights these were their representatives, along with Ban, when he could get away. Since the meeting had been called to hear Lord Davitt's information, the council wasted no time.
I regret I can't tell you who kidnapped Prince Tilif,
Davitt said.
You would, of course, prefer that type of information. But I may be able to tell you who didn't. My lands border Estel and Nander. My neighbors are the border lords of King Thigpen and King Drowden. These border lords have worked with the council, and some of them are in the confidence of Thigpen's and Drowden's spies. Prince Raffin, these men are certain that neither King Thigpen nor King Drowden was involved in the kidnapping of the Leonid.
Raffin and Katza caught each other's eyes.
Then it must be King Byrne of Wester,
Raffin said. And so it must, though Katza couldn't imagine the motive.
Tell us your sources, and your sources' sources. We'll look into it. If this turns out to be true information, we'll be that much closer to an explanation.
The meeting did not go on long. The Seven Kingdoms had been quiet, and Davitt's news was enough to occupy Al and the other spies for the time being.
It would help us, Prince Greening,
Rathen said.
If you'd allow us to keep your grandfather's rescue a secret for now, we can't guarantee his safety if we don't even know who attacked him.
Of course, Poe said. I agree.
But perhaps a cryptic message to your family to say that all's well with him.
Yes, I think I could fashion such a message.
Excellent.
Rathen clapped his hands on the table.
Anything else? Katza?
I've nothing.
Good.
Rathen stood.
Until we hear some news, then, or until Grandfather Teyleth remembers more, Gideon, will you take Lord Davit back to his rooms? All, Horan, Waller, Bertel, will you come with me? I wish a moment. We'll take the inner passage, Katza, if you don't mind a parade through your sleeping room.
Go ahead. It's better than a parade through the corridors.
The prince, Katza. Will you take the prince?
Yes, go on.
Rathen turned away with Al and the spies. The soldiers and the servants said their goodbyes and departed.
I trust you've recovered from your illness at dinner, Katza, if you've been starting fights. Indeed, it sounds as if you're back to your normal self.
She would be civil to him in front of Poe and Lord Davit, though he laughed now in her face.
Yes. Thank you, Gideon. Good night to you.
Gideon nodded and left with Lord Davit. Poe and Katza were alone. Poe leaned back against the table.
Am I not trusted to find my way through the halls by myself?
He meant for me to take you through an inner passageway. If you're seen wandering around the hallways of Randa's court at this hour, people will talk. This court will turn the most mundane thing into something to talk about.
Yes, I believe that's the case with most courts.
Do you plan to stay long at the court?
I should like to stay until my grandfather's feeling better.
Then we'll have to come up with an excuse for your presence. For isn't it generally known that you seek your grandfather?
Poe nodded.
If you agreed to train with me, that might serve as an excuse.
She began to put out the torches.
What do you mean?
People would understand if I stayed in order to train with you. They must see that in our view, it's a valuable opportunity for both of us.
She paused before the last torch and considered his proposal. She understood him completely. She was tired of fighting 9 or 10 men at once, fully armored men, none of them able to touch her, and she always tempering her blows. It would be a thrill, a pure thrill, to fight Poe again. To fight him regularly, a dream.
Wouldn't it seem as if you'd given up the search for your grandfather?
I've already been to Wester and Sunder. I can travel to Nander and Estel under the guise of seeking information, can't I, using this city as my base? No city's more central than Randa's.
He could do that, and no one would have reason to question it. She put out the last torch and walked back to him. Half of his face was lit by the light in the hall outside the door. It was his gold eye, his blackened eye, that was illuminated. She looked up at him and set her chin.
I'll train with you. But don't expect me to take more care of your face than I did today.
He burst into laughter, but then his eyes sobered and he looked at the floor.
Forgive me for that, Katza. I wish to make an ally of Lord Gideon, not an enemy. It seemed the only way.
Katza shook her head with impatience.
Gideon is a fool.
He reacted naturally enough, considering his position.
He brought his fingertips to her chin suddenly. She froze. Forgetting the question she'd been about to ask regarding Gideon and what in the Midlands his position should be. He tilted her face to the light.
It was my ring.
She didn't understand him.
It was my ring that scratched you.
Your ring?
Well, one of my rings.
It was one of his rings that scratched her, and now his fingertips touched her face. His hand dropped, returning to his side. And he looked at her calmly, as if this were normal, as if friends she'd only just made always touched her face with their fingertips, as if she ever made friends, as if she had any basis for comparison, to decide what was normal when one made friends and what was not. She was not normal. She marched to the doorway and grabbed the torch from the wall.
Come.
For it was time to get him out of here, this strange person, this cat-eyed person who seemed created to rattle her. She would knock those eyes out of his face the next time they fought, she would knock the hoops from his ears and the rings from his hands. It was time to get him out of here, so that she could return to her rooms and return to herself. Chapter 10. He was a marvelous opponent. She couldn't get to him. She couldn't hit him where she meant to, or as hard as she wanted. He was so quick to block or to twist, so quick to react. She couldn't knock him from his feet. She couldn't trap him when their fight had devolved into a wrestling match on the floor. He was so much stronger than she, and for the first time in her life, she found her lesser strength to be a disadvantage. No one had ever gotten close enough to her for it to matter. Before this, he was so finely tuned to his surroundings and to her movements, and that was also part of the challenge. He always seemed to know what she was doing, even when she was behind him.
"I'll grant you don't have night vision if you'll grant you have eyes in the back of your head,"
she said once, when she'd entered the practice room and he'd greeted her without looking round to identify her.
"What do you mean?"
"You always know what's happening behind you."
"Katsa, do you never notice the noise you make when you burst into a room? No one flings doors open the way you do."
"Perhaps your grace gives you a heightened sense of things."
He shook his head.
"Perhaps, but no more than your own."
He still got the worst of their fights, because of her flexibility and her tireless energy, and mostly because of her speed. She might not hit him how she wanted, but she still hit him, and he suffered pain more. He stopped the fight once, while she grappled to pin his arm and his legs and his back to the ground, and he hit her repeatedly in the ribs with his one free hand.
"Doesn't that hurt?"
he said, gasping with laughter.
"Don't you feel it? I've hit you possibly 12 times, and you don't even flinch."
She sat up on her heels and felt the spot below her breast.
"It hurts, but it's not bad."
"Your bones are made of rock. You walk away from these fights without a sore spot, while I limp away and spend the day icing my bruises."
He didn't wear his rings while they fought. He'd come without them the first day. When she'd protested that it was an unnecessary precaution, his face had assumed a mask of innocence.
"I promised Gidden, didn't I?"
he'd said. And that fight had begun with Poe ducking and laughing as Katsa swung at his face. They didn't wear their boots either, not after Katsa accidentally clipped him on the forehead. He had dropped to his hands and knees, and she saw at once what had happened.
"Call Raff!"
she'd cried to all, who watched on the side. She'd sat Poe on the floor, ripped off her own sleeve, and tried to stop the flow of blood that ran into his dazed eyes. When Raffin had given him the go-ahead to fight a few days later, she'd insisted they fight barefoot, and in truth, she had taken more care of his face since then. They almost always practiced in front of an audience, a scattering of soldiers or underlords. Al, whenever he could, for the fights gave him so much pleasure. Gidden, though he always seemed to grow grumpy as he watched, and never stayed long. Even Helda came on occasion, the only woman who did, and sat with wide eyes that grew wider the longer she sat. Randa did not come, which was pleasant. Katsa was glad of his tendency to keep her at arm's length. They ate together most days, after practicing, in her dining room, alone, or in Raffin's workrooms, with Raffin and Ban. Sometimes at a table Raffin had brought into Tealiff's room. The grandfather was still very ill, but company seemed to cheer and strengthen him. When they sat together talking, sometimes the silver and gold of Poe's eyes caught her off guard. She could not become used to his eyes. They muddled her. But she met them when he looked at her, and she forced herself to breathe and talk and not become overwhelmed. They were eyes. They were only his eyes. And she wasn't a coward. And besides, she didn't want to behave toward him as the entire court behaved toward her, avoiding her eyes, awkwardly, coldly. She didn't want to do that to a friend. He was a friend, and in the final few weeks of summer, for the first time in her life, Randa's court became a place of contentment for Katsa, a place of good hard work and of friends. All spies moved steadily, learning what they could from their travels to Nandor and Estel. The kingdoms, amazingly, were at peace. The heat and the closeness of the air seemed to bring a lull to Randa's cruelty as well, or perhaps he was merely distracted by the flood of foods and wares that always washed into the city from every trade route at that time of year. Whatever the reason, Randa did not summon Katsa to perform any of his nasty errands. Katsa found herself daring to relax into summer's end. She never ran out of questions for Poe.
"Where'd you get your name?"
she asked him one day as they sat in the grandfather's room, talking quietly so as not to wake him. Poe wound a cloth wrapped with ice around his shoulder.
"Which one? I've got lots to choose from."
Katsa reached across the table to help him tie the cloth tight.
"Poe, does everyone call you that?"
"My brothers gave me that name when I was little. It's a kind of tree in Leenid, the Poe tree. In autumn, its leaves turn silver and gold. Inevitable nickname, I guess."
Katsa broke a piece of bread. She wondered if the name had been given fondly, or if it had been an attempt by Poe's brothers to isolate him, to remind him always that he was a graceling. She watched him pile his plate high with bread, meat, fruit, and cheese, and smiled as the food began to disappear almost as fast as he'd piled it up. Katsa could eat a lot, but Poe was something else altogether.
"What is it like to have six older brothers?"
"I don't think it was for me what it would be for most others. Hand fighting is revered in Leenid. My brothers are great fighters, and of course I was able to hold my own with them, even though I was small, and eventually surpass them, every one of them. They treated me like an equal, like more than an equal."
"And were they also your friends?"
"Oh yes, especially the younger ones."
Perhaps it was easier then to be a graceling fighter if one was a boy or in a kingdom that revered hand fighting. Or perhaps Poe's grace had announced itself less drastically than Katsa's had. Perhaps if Katsa had six older brothers, she would also have six friends. Or maybe everything was different in Leenid.
"I've heard the Leenid castles are built on mountain peaks so high that people have to be lifted up to them by ropes."
Poe grinned.
"Only my father's city has the ropes."
He poured himself more water and turned back to the food on his plate.
"Well, are you going to explain them to me?"
"Katsa, is it too much for you to understand that a man might be hungry after you've beaten him half to death? I'm beginning to think it's part of your fighting strategy, keeping me from eating. You want me weak and faint."
"For someone who's Leenid's finest fighter, you have a delicate constitution."
He laughed and put his fork down.
"All right, all right. How can I describe this?"
He picked his fork up again and used it to draw a picture in the air as he spoke.
"My father's city sits at the top of this enormous tall rock, tall as a mountain, that rises straight up from the plains below. There are three ways up to the city. One is a road built into the sides of the rock that winds around and around it slowly. The second is a stairway built into one side of the rock. It bends back and forth on itself until it reaches the top. It's a good approach if you're strong and wide awake and don't have a horse, though most who choose that route eventually tire and end up begging a ride from someone on the road. My brothers and I race it sometimes."
"Who wins?"
"Where's your confidence in me that you need to ask that question? You would beat us all, of course."
"My ability to fight has no bearing on my ability to run up a flight of stairs."
"Nonetheless, I can't imagine you allowing anyone to beat you at anything."
Katsa snorted.
"And the third way?"
"The third way is the ropes."
"But how do they work?"
Poe scratched his head.
"Well, it's fairly simple, really. They hang from a great wheel that sits flat, on its side, at the top of the rock. They dangle down over the edge of the rock, and at the bottom they're attached to platforms. Horses turn the wheel pulls the ropes, and the platforms rise."
"It seems a terrible amount of trouble."
"Mostly everyone uses the road. The ropes are only for great shipments of things."
"And the whole city sits up in the sky?"
Poe broke himself another piece of bread and nodded.
"But why would they build a city in such a place?"
Poe shrugged.
"I suppose because it's beautiful."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, you can see forever from the edges of the city. The fields, the mountains and hills. To one side, the sea."
"The sea."
The sea put an end to her questions for a moment. Katza had seen the lakes of Nander, some of them so wide she could barely make out the opposite shore. But she'd never seen the sea. She couldn't imagine that much water, nor could she imagine water that rocked and crashed against the land, as she'd heard the sea did. She stared absently at the walls of Tilith's small room and tried to think of it.
You can see two of my brother's castles from the city, in the foothills of the mountains. The other castles are beyond the mountains, or too far to see.
How many castles are there?
7, just as there are 7 suns.
Then one is yours.
The smallest one.
Do you mind that yours is the smallest?
Poe chose an apple from the bowl of fruit on the table.
I'm glad mine is the smallest, though my brothers don't believe me when I say so.
She didn't blame them for disbelieving. She'd never heard of a man, not even her cousin, who didn't want as large a holding as he could have. Gidden was always comparing his estate to that of his neighbors. And when Raffin listed his complaints about Thigpen, he never neglected to mention a certain disagreement over the precise location of the Midlands' eastern border. She'd thought all men were like that. She'd thought she wasn't like that because she wasn't a man.
I don't have the ambitions of my brothers. I've never wanted a large holding. I've never wanted to be a king or an overlord.
No, nor have I. I've thanked the hills countless times that Raffin was born the son of Randa, and I only his niece, and his sister's daughter at that.
My brothers want all that power. They love to get wrapped up in the disputes of my father's court. They actually revel in it. They love managing their own castles and their own cities. I do believe sometimes that they all wish to be king.
He leaned back in his chair and absently ran his fingers along his sore shoulder.
My castle doesn't have a city. It's not far from a town, but the town governs itself. It doesn't have a court, either. Really, it's just a great house that'll be my home for the times when I'm not traveling.
Katza took an apple for herself.
You intend to travel?
I'm more restless than my brothers. But it's so beautiful, my castle. It's the most wonderful place to go home to. It sits on a cliff above the sea. There are steps down to the water, cut into the cliff, and balconies hanging over the cliff. You feel as if you'll fall if you lean too far. At night, the sun goes down across the water, and the whole sky turns red and orange, and the sea to match it. Sometimes there are great fish out there, fish of impossible colors. They come to the surface and roll about. You can watch them from the balconies. And in winter, the waves are high, and the wind'll knock you down. You can't go out to the balconies in winter. It's dangerous and wild.
Grandfather,
he said suddenly. He jumped up and turned to the bed. Informed that his grandfather had awoken, Katza thought wryly, by the eyes in the back of his head.
You speak of your castle, boy.
Grandfather, how are you feeling?
Katza ate her apple and listened to them talk. Her head was full of the things Poe had said. She hadn't known there were sights in the world so beautiful a person would want to spend an age staring at them. Poe turned to her then, and a torch on the wall caught the gleam of his eyes. She focused on breathing.
I have a weakness for beautiful sights. My brothers tease me.
Your brothers are the foolish ones for not seeing the strength in beautiful things. Come here, child,
he said to Katza.
Let me see your eyes, for they make me stronger.
And his kindness brought a smile to her face, though his words were nonsense. She went to sit beside Grandfather Tilith, and he and Poe told her more about Poe's castle and Poe's brothers and Roar's city in the sky. Chapter 11.
How far is Gidden's estate from Randa City?
Poe asked her late one morning. They sat on the floor of their practice room, drinking water and resting. It had been a good session. Poe had returned the day before from a visit to Nander, and Katza thought the time apart had been good for them. They came together again with a new sharpness.
It's near, in the west. A day's journey, perhaps.
Have you seen it?
Yes. It's large and very grand. He doesn't get home often, but he still manages to keep it well.
I'm sure he does.
Gidden had come to their practice today. He'd been the only visitor, and he hadn't stayed long. She didn't know why he came, when it always seemed to put him in a bad humor. Katza lay on her back and looked up at the high ceiling. The light poured into the room from the great east-facing windows. The days were beginning to shorten. The air would crispen soon, and the castle would smell of wood burning in the fireplaces. The leaves would crackle under her horse's hooves when she went riding. It had been such a quiet couple of weeks. She would like a council task. She'd like to get out of the city and stretch her legs. She wondered if Al had any news about Grandfather Teelif yet. Maybe she could go to Wester herself and poke around for information.
How will you answer Gidden when he asks you to marry him? Will you accept?
Katza sat up and stared at him.
That's an absurd question.
Absurd? Why?
His face was clear of its usual smiles. She didn't think he was teasing her.
Why in the Midlands would Gidden ask me to marry him?
His eyes narrowed.
Katza, you're not serious.
She looked at him blankly, and now he did begin to smile.
Katza, don't you know Gidden's in love with you?
Katza snorted.
Don't be ridiculous. Gidden lives to criticize me.
Poe shook his head, and his laugh began to rumble from his chest.
Katza, how can you be so blind? He's completely smitten. Don't you see how jealous he is? Don't you remember how he reacted when I scratched your face?
An unpleasant feeling began to gather in her stomach.
I don't see what that has to do with it. And besides, how would you know? I don't believe Lord Gidden confides in you.
He laughed.
No, no, he certainly doesn't. Gidden trusts me about as much as he trusts Mergen. I imagine he thinks any man who fights you as I do is no better than an opportunist, and no worse than a thug.
You're deceived. Gidden feels nothing for me.
I can't make you see it, Katza, if you're determined not to see it.
Poe stretched onto his back and yawned.
All the same, I might think up a response if I were you, just in case he were to propose.
He laughed again.
I'll have to ice my shoulder, as usual. I'd say you won again today, Katza.
She jumped to her feet.
Are we done here?
I suppose so. Are you hungry?
She waved him off and marched to the door. She left him lying on his back in the light of the windows and ran to find Raffin. Katza burst into Raffin's workrooms. Raffin and Ban sat at a table, huddled together over a book.
Are you alone?
They looked up, surprised.
Yes?
Is Gidden in love with me?
Raffin blinked, and Ban's eyes widened.
He's never spoken to me about it. But, yes, I think anyone who knows him would say he's in love with you.
Katza slapped her hand to her forehead.
Of all the fool... How can he...
She paced to the table. She turned and paced back to the door.
Has he said something to you?
No, Poe told me.
She spun toward Raffin.
And why did you never tell me?
Cat.
He sat back from his book.
I thought you knew. I don't see how you could not. He makes himself your escort every time the king's business takes you away from the city. He always sits beside you at dinner.
Randa decides where we sit at dinner.
Well, and Randa probably knows Gidden hopes to marry you.
Katza paced to the table again, clutching her hair.
Oh, this is dreadful. Whatever shall I do?
If he asks you to marry him, you'll say no. You'll tell him it's nothing to do with him. You'll tell him you're determined not to marry, that you don't wish children. Whatever you need to say so he understands it's nothing to do with him.
I wouldn't marry Gidden to save my life. Not even to save yours.
Well,
Raffin's eyes were full of laughter.
I'd leave that part out.
Katza sighed and walked again to the door.
You're not the most perceptive person I've ever known, Kat, if you don't mind my saying so. Your capacity for missing the obvious is astonishing.
She threw her arms into the air. She turned to go. She turned back to him suddenly at a shocking thought.
You're not in love with me, are you?
He stared at her for a moment, speechless. Then he burst into laughter. Ban laughed too, though he tried valiantly to hide it behind his hand. Katzer was too relieved to be offended.
All right, all right. I suppose I deserve that.
My dear Katzer, Gidden is so very handsome. Are you sure you won't reconsider?
Raffin and Ban clutched their stomachs and guffawed. Katzer waved their nonsense away. They were hopeless. She turned to go.
Council meeting tonight,
Raffin said to her back. She raised her hand to show she'd heard. She closed the door on their laughter.
There's very little happening in the Seven Kingdoms,
Al said.
We've called this meeting only because we have some information about Prince Tilif we can't make any sense of. We're hoping you'll have some ideas.
Ban had joined them for this meeting, because the grandfather was well enough now to be left alone on occasion. Katzer had taken advantage of Ban's broad chest and shoulders and seated him between herself and Gidden. Gidden could not possibly see her, but just in case, she'd positioned Raffin between them as well. Al and Poe were across from her. Poe sat back in his chair, his eyes glimmering in the corner of her vision, no matter which way she looked.
Lord Davit gave us true information. Neither Nander nor Estel knows anything of the kidnapping. Neither was involved. But now we're almost certain that King Byrne of Wester is also innocent.
Could it be Mergen, then?
But with what motive?
He has no motive,
Raffin said.
But then, he has no less motive than anyone else. It's what we keep coming up against. There is no motive for anyone to have done this. Even Poe, Prince Greening, has been able to come up with none.
Poe nodded.
My grandfather's only importance is to his family.
And if someone had it in mind to provoke the Leenid royal family, wouldn't they reveal themselves eventually? Otherwise, the power play becomes pointless.
Has Tilif said anything more?
He said they blindfolded him and drugged him. He said he was on a boat for a long time and their land travel was shorter in comparison, which suggests his captors took him east by boat from Leenid, possibly to one of the southern Sundaran ports, and then up through the forests to Mergen City. He said that when he heard them speak, he believed their accents to be southern.
It does suggest Sundar and Mergen.
But it didn't make sense. None of the kings had reason, but Mergen even less. Mergen worked for others, and his sole motivation was money. Everyone at the table, everyone in the council knew that.
Poe, your grandfather had no argument with your father or any of your brothers. Your mother?
None. I'm sure of it.
I don't see how you can be so sure.
Poe's eyes flashed to him.
You'll have to take my word, Lord Gidden. Neither my father, nor my brothers, nor my mother, nor anyone else at the Leenid Court was involved in the kidnapping.
Poe's word is good enough for the council,
Raffin said.
And if it wasn't Burn, Drowden, Figpen, Randa, or Roar, that leaves Mergen.
Poe raised his eyebrows.
Have none of you considered the King of Monsey?
A king with a reputation for kindness to injured animals and lost children come out of his isolation to kidnap his wife's aging father? A bit unlikely, don't you think?
We've made inquiries and uncovered nothing. King Lek is a peace-loving man. Either it's Mergen, or one of the kings is keeping a secret even from his own spies.
It may have been Mergen, or it may not. Either way, Mergen knows who's responsible. If Mergen knows, then the people closest to him know. Couldn't we find one of Mergen's people? I could make him talk.
Not without revealing your identity, my lady.
But she could kill him after she questioned him.
Now hold on.
Katzer held up her hand.
I said nothing of killing.
But it's not worth the information, Katzer, for you to interrogate someone who'll recognize you and speak of it to Mergen afterward.
Greening should be the one to do it anyway,
Gidden said, and Poe's cool eyes flicked to him again.
Mergen wouldn't question the motivation of a Leenid prince. Mergen would expect it of him. In fact, I don't see why you haven't done it already,
Gidden said to Poe.
If you wish so much to know who's responsible.
Katzer was too irritated to care about her strategic seating plan. She leaned around Raffin and Ban to address Gidden.
It's because Mergen can't know that Poe knows Mergen is involved. How would Poe explain that knowledge without incriminating us?
But that's just why you can't question Mergen's people, Katsa, unless you're willing to kill afterwards.
Gideon thumped his hand on the table and glared at her.
All right, all right. We're going in circles.
Katsa sat back, seething.
Katsa, the information isn't worth the risk to you or to the Council, nor, I think, is it worth the violence.
She sighed inwardly. He was right, of course.
Perhaps it'll be worth it someday in the future. But for now, Grandfather Teelif is safe, and we've seen no sign from Mergen or from anyone else that he's being targeted again. Poe, if there are steps you wish to take, that's your affair, though I'd ask you to discuss it with us first.
I must think on it.
Then the matter is closed for now, until we learn something new or until Poe comes to a decision. Al, is there anything else on the table?
Al began to speak then of a Westeran village that had met a Nandoran raiding party with a pair of catapults given to them by a Westeran lord who was friend to the Council. The Nandoran raiders had fled, thinking they were being attacked by an army. There was laughter at the table, and Al began another story, but Katz's thoughts wandered to Mergen and his dungeons, to the Sundaran forests that likely held the secrets of the kidnapping. She felt Poe's gaze, and she glanced at him across the table. His eyes were on her, but he didn't see her. His mind was elsewhere. He got that look sometimes when they sat together after their fights. She watched his face. The cut on his forehead was no more than a thin red line now. It would leave a scar. She wondered if that would rankle his leaned vanity, but then she smiled within herself. He wasn't really vain. He hadn't cared a bit when she'd blackened his eye. He'd done nothing to hide the gash on his forehead. And besides, no vain person would choose to fight her day after day. No vain person would put his body at the mercy of her hands. His sleeves were rolled to his elbows again. His manners were so careless. Her eyes rested on the shadows in the hollows of his neck, then rose to his face again. She supposed he would have reason to be vain. He was handsome enough, as handsome as Gideon or Raffin, with his straight nose and the set of his mouth and his strong shoulders. And even those gleaming eyes, even they might be considered handsome. His eyes came back into focus then and looked into hers, and then something mischievous in his eyes and a grin, almost as if he knew exactly what she was thinking, exactly what she'd decided about his claims to vanity. Katz's face closed, and she glowered at him. The meeting ended, and chairs scraped. Raffin pulled her aside to speak of something. She was grateful for the excuse to turn away. She wouldn't see Poe again until their next fight, and the fights always returned her to herself. Chapter 12. The next morning, Randa came to their practice for the first time. He stood at the side so that everyone in the room was compelled to stand as well and watch him instead of the fighters they'd come to see. Katsa was glad to fight, glad for the excuse to ignore him, except that she couldn't ignore him. He was so tall and broad, and he stood against the white wall in bright blue robes. His lazy laugh carried into every corner of the room. She couldn't shake the sense of him, and there must be something he wanted. He never sought out his lady killer unless there was something he wanted. She had been running through a drill with Poe when Randa had arrived, a drill that was giving her some trouble. It began with Katsa on her knees and Poe behind her, pinning her arms behind her back. Her task was to break free of Poe's grip and then grapple with him until she had trapped him in the same position. She could always fight her way free of Poe's grip. That wasn't the problem. It was the counterpin that frustrated her. Even if she managed to knock him to his knees and trap his arms, She couldn't keep him down. It was a matter of brute strength. If he tried to muscle himself to his feet, she didn't have the force to stop him, not unless she knocked him unconscious or injured him seriously, and that wasn't the point of the exercise. She needed to find a holding position that would make the effort of rising too painful to be worth his while. They began the drill again. She knelt with Poe at her back, and Poe's hands tightened around her wrists. Randa's voice rose and fell, and one of the stewards responded, flattering, fawning. Everyone flattered Randa. Katza was ready for Poe this time. She twisted out of his grip and was on him like a wildcat. She pummeled his stomach, hooked her foot between his legs, and battered him to his knees. She yanked at his arms, his right shoulder. That was the one he was always icing. She twisted his right arm and leaned all her weight against it, so that any attempt to move would require him to wrench his shoulder and bring more pain to it than she was already causing him to feel.
I surrender.
She released him, and he heaved himself to his feet. He massaged his shoulder.
Good work, Katza.
Again.
They ran through the drill again, and then once more, and both times she trapped him easily.
You've got it. Good. What next? Shall I try it?
Her name cut through the air then, and her hackles rose. She'd been right. He hadn't come only to watch. And now, before all these people, she must act pleasant and civil. She fought against the frown that rose to her face and turned to the king.
It's so amusing,
Randa said,
to see you struggling with an opponent, Katza.
I'm glad it gives you amusement, Lord King.
Prince Greening, how do you find our Lady Killer?
She's the superior fighter by far, Lord King. If she didn't hold herself back, I'd be in great trouble.
Randa laughed.
Indeed. I've noticed it's you who comes to dinner with bruises, and not she.
Pride in his possession. Katza forced herself to unclench her fists. She forced herself to breathe, to hold her uncle's gaze even though she wanted to scratch the leer from his face.
Katza, come to me later today. I have a job for you.
Yes, Lord King. Thank you, Lord King.
Randa leaned back on his heels and surveyed the room. Then, with his stewards rushing into their places behind him, he exited with a great swish of blue robes, and Katza stared after him until he and his entourage had vanished. And then she stared at the door the stewards slammed behind him. Around the room, slowly, lords and soldiers sat down. Katza was vaguely aware of their movements, vaguely aware of Poe's eyes on her face, watching her silently.
What's it to be now, Katza?
She knew what she wanted. She felt it shooting down her arms and into her fingers, tingling in her legs and feet.
A straight fight. Anything fair. Until one of us surrenders.
Poe narrowed his eyes. He considered her tight fists and her hard mouth.
We'll have that fight, but we'll have it tomorrow. We're done for today.
No, we fight.
Katza, we're done.
She stalked up to him, close, so that no one else could hear.
What's the matter, Poe? Do you fear me?
Yes, I fear you, as I should when you're angry. I won't fight you when you're angry, nor should you fight me when I'm angry. That's not the purpose of these practices.
And when he told her she was angry, she realized it was true. And just as quickly, her anger fizzled into despair. Randa would send her on another strong-arm mission. He would send her to hurt some poor, petty criminal, some fool who deserved to keep his fingers, even if he was dishonorable. He would send her, and she must go. For the power sat with him. They ate in her dining room. Katza stared at her plate. He was talking about his brothers, how his brothers would love to see their practices. She must come to Leenid one day and fight with him for his family. They'd be amazed by her skill, and they'd honor her greatly. And he could show her the most beautiful sights in his father's city. She wasn't listening. She was picturing the arms she'd broken for her uncle. The arms bent the wrong way at the elbow, bone splinters sticking through the skin. He said something about his shoulder, and she shook herself and looked at him.
What did you say? About your shoulder? I'm sorry.
He dropped his gaze and fiddled with his fork.
Your uncle has quite an effect on you. You haven't been yourself since he walked into the practice room.
Or maybe I have been myself. And the other times I'm not myself.
What do you mean?
My uncle thinks me savage. He thinks me a killer. Well, isn't he right? Didn't I become savage when he entered the room? And what is it we're practicing every day?
She tore apart a piece of bread and threw it onto her plate. She glared at her meal.
I don't believe you're savage.
She sighed sharply.
You haven't seen me with Randa's enemies.
He raised his cup to his lips and drank, then lowered it, watching her.
What will he ask you to do this time?
She pushed the fire down that rose up from her stomach. She wondered what would happen if she slammed her plate on the ground, how many pieces it would break into.
It'll be some lord who owes him money, or who refused to agree to some bargain, or who looked at him wrong. I'll be told to hurt the man, enough so that he never dishonors my uncle again.
And you'll do what he tells you to do?
Who are these fools who continue to resist Randa's will? Haven't they heard the stories? Don't they know he'll send me?
Isn't it in your power to refuse? How can anyone force you to do anything?
The fire burst into her throat and choked her.
He is the king. And you're a fool, too, if you think I have choice in the matter.
But you do have choice. He's not the one who makes you savage. You make yourself savage when you bend yourself to his will.
She sprang to her feet and swung at his jaw with the side of her hand. She lessened the force of the blow only at the last instant when she realized he hadn't raised his arm to block her. Her hand hit his face with a sickening crack. She watched, horrified, as his chair toppled backward and his head slammed against the floor. She'd hit him hard. She knew she'd hit him hard, and he hadn't defended himself. She ran to him. He lay on his side, both hands over his jaw. A tear trickled from his eye, over his fingers, and onto the floor. He grunted or sobbed, she didn't know which. She knelt beside him and touched his shoulder.
Did I break your jaw? Can you speak?
He shifted then, pushed himself up to a sitting position. He felt at the side of his jaw and opened and closed his mouth. He moved his jaw left and right.
I don't think it's broken.
His voice was a whisper. She put her hand to his face and felt the bones under his skin. She felt the other side of his face to compare. She could tell no difference, and she caught her breath with relief.
It's not broken, though it seems it should be.
I pulled back when I realized you weren't fighting me.
She reached up to the table and dipped her hands into the water pitcher. She scooped blocks of ice onto a cloth and wrapped them up. She brought the ice to his jaw.
Why didn't you fight back?
He held the ice to his face and groaned.
This'll hurt for days.
Paul.
He looked at her and sighed.
I told you before, Katza. I won't fight when you're angry. I won't solve a disagreement between us with blows.
He lifted the ice and fingered his jaw. He moaned and held the ice to his face again.
What we do in the practice rooms, that's to help each other. We don't use it against each other. We're friends, Katza.
Shame pricked behind her eyes. It was so elemental, so obvious. It wasn't what one friend did to another. Yet she'd done it.
We're too dangerous to each other, Katza. And even if we weren't, it's not right.
I'll never do it again. I swear to it.
He caught her eyes then and held them.
I know you won't, Katza. Wildcat. Don't blame yourself. You expected me to fight back. You wouldn't have struck me otherwise.
But still, she should have known better.
It wasn't even you who angered me. It was him.
Poe considered her for a moment.
What do you think would happen if you refused to do what Randa ordered?
She didn't know, really. She only imagined him sneering at her, his words crackling with contempt.
If I don't do what he says, he'll become angry. When he becomes angry, I'll become angry. And then I'll want to kill him.
He worked his mouth back and forth.
You're afraid of your own anger.
She stopped then and looked at him, because that seemed right to her. She was afraid of her own anger.
But Randa isn't even worth your anger. He's no more than a bully.
Katza snorted.
A bully who chops off people's fingers or breaks their arms.
Not if you stop doing it for him. Much of his power comes from you.
She was afraid of her own anger. She repeated it in her mind. She was afraid of what she would do to the king, and with good reason. Look at Poe, his jaw red and beginning to swell. She'd learned to control her skill, but she hadn't learned to control her anger. And that meant she still didn't control her grace.
Should we move back to the table?
He said, for they were still sitting on the floor.
You should probably go see Raff, just to be sure nothing's broken.
Her eyes dropped.
Forgive me, Poe.
Poe heaved himself to his feet. He reached for her hand and pulled her up.
You're forgiven, lady.
She shook her head, disbelieving his kindness.
You, Leonid, are so odd. Your reactions are never what mine would be. You, so calm when I've hurt you so badly. Your father's sister, so strange in her grief.
Poe narrowed his eyes then.
What do you mean?
About what? Isn't the Queen of Muncie your father's sister?
What's she done, my father's sister?
The word is she stopped eating when she heard of your grandfather's disappearance. You didn't know? And then she closed herself and her child into her rooms, and wouldn't let anyone enter, not even the king.
She wouldn't let the king enter,
he repeated, puzzlement in his voice.
Nor anyone else, except a handmaiden to bring them meals.
Why did no one tell me about this before?
I assumed you knew, Poe. I'd no idea it would matter so much to you. Are you close to her?
Poe stared at the table, at the mess of melting ice and their half-eaten meal. His mind was elsewhere, his brow furrowed.
Poe, what is it?
He shook his head.
It's not how I would have expected Ashen to behave. But it's no matter. I must find Raffin, or Ban.
She watched his face then.
There's something you're not telling me.
He wouldn't meet her eyes.
How long will you be away on Randa's errand?
It's not likely to be more than a few days.
When you return.